Greetings, and welcome to Flanagan's EcoLogic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan. And today, it's EcoNet News, Volume 26, Issue Number 8, August 2024. Quote of the month: if you are going to be using electricity as your prime energy source, then you have to be really wise about how you're using it. Laura Humphrey, I+M Development Partners, quoted in Clean Technica, supporting passive house standards. Flanagan's Net Positive, Open Streets. When I went north to the University of Vermont as a freshman, the main downtown area in Burlington was built around Church Street, a one-way bustling city street lined with retail shops from Main to Pearl and pronounced by the stately Unitarian Church at its north end. Back then, and after dark, out came the hot rods, the engines revved, and Church Street became a drag strip. It was really noisy and dirty, and then it all changed. In 1971, Burlington hosted a four-block street fair, and 15,000 people showed up, magnetic. In the 1980 to 1981 timeframe, construction took place, transforming Church Street into a pedestrian-only mall. Now on a summer evening, Church Street is for diners, families and friends and lovers and strollers. There's street music, local art for sale. You can pop into Ben and Jerry's for a cone and maybe even watch an outdoor movie there. The mall itself has lots of benches, trees, and some large boulders that shift one's cognitive set. It's hard to imagine cars here now, the pavement long since replaced with bricks. It's a happening environment for people. Shops and restaurants thrive. Converting streets for pedestrians and bicyclists and dedicating streets auto-free is a movement, the Open Streets Movement. Witness Pearl Street in Boulder and the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica. Like Church Street, these are now destinations. Years ago, I visited Hanover, Germany, the home of Volkswagen, and thus very car-centric. Its municipal government decided to take its busiest downtown area and to turn it into a pedestrian mall. Wildly controversial at first, it became a rave success. Last year, Terry and I were in Malaga, Spain. Many of its downtown streets are blissfully devoid of cars. Its wide boulevards are for pedestrians. We marveled at the high shades covering the streets, three floors up, creating an airy space, the breeze and shade structures keeping the urban heat island effect to a minimum. And it is clean. Barcelona's mile-long Las Ramblas connects Plaza de Catalunya with the port there. It's another great example of using open streets to create high quality of life spaces. Good for the economy, good for the soul of residents and visitors. Somehow, taking away the auto enriches the urban atmosphere. Ciclovía is testament to that, reclaiming busy routes for weekend events that draw tens of thousands of bicyclists. They pour out onto the streets normally too dangerous to ride. Minneapolis has an open streets program that transforms major city streets into car-free places for a day. The Open Streets Project touts itself as the foremost expert on open streets programs. It provides advocacy, toolkits, and an information database of open street projects around the world. New York City has an open streets program. Its goal is to transform streets into public spaces open to all to allow for a range of activities, promoting economic development, supporting schools, facilitating pedestrian and bike mobility, and providing new ways for New Yorkers to enjoy cultural programming and build community. A few weeks ago, the New York Times reported that the Jackson Heights neighborhood in Queens has turned 1.3 miles of roadway into an open street for pedestrians, cyclists, and children at play. During the day, 34th Avenue is exclusively for pedestrians and cyclists. The 26-block stretch is closed to cars from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., and that has been the case every day since 2020. Seven public schools are near the 34th Avenue route, and 7,000 kids now use the corridor daily to go back and forth to school. There are tables for chess and ping pong and socializing, plenty of room for wheeling the elderly. There's a lemonade stand, a woman tends a garden in the median of the avenue. Sounds idyllic, right? Gardening club meetings, clothing swaps, cumbia dance lessons, crochet lessons, Simba, and more. How did this project take root? In 2020, during the pandemic, community members formed the 34th Avenue Open Street Coalition. They wanted out of their apartments. Their goal was to make their streets more people-centered. They succeeded. But dedicating the avenue during the day to something other than cars was not without controversy. There was a petition to end the project. Others wanted fewer hours of street closures, and others focused on the fear of mopeds making walking and biking unsafe. But its advocates, the majority indeed, prevailed. Now they say that the open street brought their neighborhood together. Now the community wants to make it a permanent park. They've already named it Paseo Park. Paseo is the Spanish word for leisurely stroll. For years, the community has been ranked last for park space. Is green space a measure of a community's true wealth? Perhaps so. As such, 34th Avenue is a big step and a replicable model. World's biggest iron air battery plan for Maine. There's a plan to build the world's biggest battery in Maine, a government-funded iron air battery. Its greatest feature, 100-hour duration storage. Lithium ion provides only 4 to 5 hours. Bill Gates has highlighted this technology. Iron air batteries are made with one of the most abundant materials on Earth, iron, and they are non-flammable, non-toxic, inexpensive, and thus scalable. In fact, Form Energy has been supported by an array of tycoons, from Bill Gates to Jeff Bezos to Richard Branson, all part of Breakthrough Energy Ventures. Started in 2017, testing began in 2018 in a 45,000-square-foot facility in Somerville, Massachusetts. Form Energy selected Iron Air for its first product, and Form has made bold claims. In 2021, it claimed that its batteries will cost one-tenth that of any other form of storage available today. Form Energy is ramping up. It has facilities in 4 locations, Somerville R&D, Berkeley, California Engineering, Pittsburgh for pilot manufacturing, and Weirton, West Virginia for high-volume manufacturing. Form received a California Energy Commission grant for safety testing and field verification. Time magazine featured Form Energy's iron air batteries as one of the best inventions of 2023. Form's batteries are about the size of a washer-dryer set, taking in oxygen to convert iron to rust, harnessing the resulting electrons and their energy. To make the batteries, Form crushes a particularly inexpensive and beneficially porous form of iron. It then reforms the iron into sheets of electrodes to be paired in a wash of electrolyte with air electrodes. Each battery cell is about 4 feet high and several inches thick, housed in a plastic material. The batteries are designed for utility grid support. Form has 5 pilot projects in the works, including 10 megawatt facilities in Minnesota and Colorado. The Minnesota project for XL Energy is 10 megawatts, 1,000 megawatt hours, and planned to come online in 2025, located near Xcel's Sherco solar plant, helping Xcel to maximize its use of renewables. Form's biggest project is now planned for Maine. The U.S. Department of Energy has provided $389 million in grant funding to shore up the New England power grid. The money will be used in large part to support the development of terminals to collect power from new and planned offshore wind farms, and to distribute power across the region. A big part of the total, $147 million, is for the Form Energy battery. It will be located to support one of the most congested parts of the New England grid. The main battery will be located at the site of a former pulp and paper mill in Lincoln, off Interstate 95 between Bangor and Mount Katahdin. It will be capable of injecting 85 megawatts of power into the grid for up to 100 hours. Capable of delivering 8,500 megawatt hours of energy storage. The battery will store renewable power at times of abundance, when offshore wind farms are cranking, and then discharge their valuable capacity and energy when the grid calls for it. Dutch Stadium steps towards net positive. PV Magazine reports that a second battery has been installed at the Johan Cruyff Arena The second battery increases the stadium's storage capacity up to 8.6 megawatt hours. That's enough to run a soccer match entirely on sustainable energy. Johan Cruyff is the largest stadium in the Netherlands, home of the Ajax soccer team. The arena features soccer matches and concerts. In 2018, its management installed a 3-megawatt storage system to serve emergency backup power. Now the expanded project allows the venue to run entirely on green power so that concerts and soccer matches can be zero emission. The stadium's CEO is proud, calling it a major step in making soccer matches sustainable. Now the stadium has an audacious ambition to be net positive by 2030, making a positive contribution to society and the climate. The site also has a unique distinction. In 2018, it was reportedly Europe's largest project to use secondhand batteries and batteries from electric vehicles in a commercial building. Today, the on-site batteries store energy from 4,200 solar panels on the stadium's roof, about 2 DC megawatts of capacity, as well as a wind turbine in the village of Oudendijk and a local solar park. The project was funded by the European Union and the European Regional Development Fund. In used battery-related news, German carmaker Porsche AG has developed a 5-megawatt energy storage system from used vehicle batteries. Located at the sports carmaker's plant in Leipzig, Germany, the battery energy storage system is made up of 4,400 individual battery modules. Record investment in clean energy. The Clean Energy Investment Monitor, a joint project between Rhodium Group and the MIT Center for Energy and Environmental Policy Research, found that in the first 6 months of 2024, U.S. clean tech investment reached $147 billion. That's a record level, and a 30% jump from the same period last year. The report measures actual investments from both public and private sources. A Canary Media article correlates the record investment and the Inflation Reduction Act. In 2021, there was $141 billion invested in clean tech. In 2020, it was $115 billion. In the first half of this year alone, these annual levels have been eclipsed, with 2023 and 2024 levels likely wiping away the past record levels. Good news. The largest segment of investment falls into the retail category, clean energy purchases by households and businesses. That group was responsible for $64 billion of investment to outfit homes, buildings with heat pumps and solar panels and more, and to purchase EVs. Retail was followed by energy and industry, including support for new wind turbine installations and green hydrogen projects, accounting for $47 billion. The smallest but fastest growing sector is clean energy manufacturing at $36 billion. With investments in new factories for clean technologies, battery factories in particular. Remembering the coal reality. Yes, the clean energy revolution is moving ahead, full steam ahead. It is exciting and growing in momentum. Good technologies are taking advantage of the Earth's abundant renewable energy, notably the sun and wind. The public sentiments are driving policies that are accelerating the transition. Yet there is considerable work to be done cleaning up our power supply. In the United States, we still get nearly a fifth of our power from coal. In 2022, 19.5% of electricity generation was coal, down from 38.6% in 2014 and 51% in 2021. In the U.S., coal consumption peaked between 2005 and 2008, when over a billion short tons were used each year. Natural gas was promoted as a bridge fuel to a clean energy future. The Sierra Club continues to be at the forefront of the movement to end coal in the United States. Huge progress has been made, and we are reminded to keep the focus on the prize, the end of coal-fired generation in the United States. Once the dominant form of generation, it is now going down. But there are still 146 operating coal plants in the United States. The Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign has a goal of retiring 15 of them by the end of this year, after successfully closing 7 already this year. Overall, Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign has helped to retire 384 facilities since 2010, but many of the remaining coal plants are more entrenched. They are newer and they are bigger. And in many cases, they are located in states where the governments are pro-fossil fuels and hostile to clean energy efforts. Thus, the need for continued, even accelerated, U.S. action, commitment, and speed is imperative. Why? The rest of the world needs leadership. Globally, coal is on the rise. It is used for about a third of total electricity production. In 2022, global consumption reached an all-time high, rising 4% to 8.4 billion tons. It is likely that it hit a new record in 2023. According to the International Energy Agency, global coal use is growing each year. China's growth rate of coal use is 5%. In India, there is an 8% annual growth rate. And coal is also rising in Indonesia, Vietnam, and the Philippines. Together, these growth countries represent more than 70% of coal demand. Meanwhile, the U.S. and Europe's use of coal is declining, with annual declines of around 20% expected for 2023. There are 146 U.S. coal plants, while China has 1,142. India is next with 282 operational coal plants. Then the U.S. is followed in their number of coal plants by Japan, Indonesia, Russia, Germany, Poland, Turkey, Ukraine, and the Philippines. Another metric is the total installed coal capacity by country. China has 1,108 gigawatts of coal, India 236 gigawatts, compared to the U.S. at 205 gigawatts. Yes, there is lots of hard and meaningful work to be done to get well beyond coal. We salute those that demonstrate viable alternatives. The Passive House Standard and Network. The Passive House Network is a network of professionals and owners working to build healthier, more comfortable, and resilient buildings. Passive House represents a design and construction standard that produces dramatic reductions in building energy use and carbon emissions. Some say that it's the best tool to drive down building emissions, as much as 75%. It's a high-performance building literacy program. Passive House, when coupled with solar, puts zero net energy within easy reach. It's a proven standard that's been applied to over 100,000 buildings. Some say that it is today's highest energy standard for building performance, delivering up to a 90% reduction in heating and cooling demand. The marginal costs of its construction are recovered in lower utility bills forever. Passive House is based on five core principles. 1. Airtightness. 2. Climate-specific insulation. 3. Thermal bridge-free design. 4. High-performance windows and doors. 5. Continuous ventilation with heat recovery. The Passive House Network is a 501c3 nonprofit founded in 2011 that provides education and community to professionals across the U.S. building industry. It is focused on the rapid implementation of the Passive House building standards to robustly address the climate and social justice crises. Passive houses have a number of benefits: sound insulation, fresh air, lower bills, and the buildings stand up better in extreme weather conditions like wind, rain, heat, or excessive cold. There are over 1,860 certified passive houses in New York City, and this number is expected to grow. Well-insulated homes use less energy and have lower utility bills. This is especially important when electrifying homes. Since electricity costs more than gas, it makes sense and saves dollars to use it efficiently. Sendero Verde is in New York City. It's a 709-unit apartment complex that is the largest certified passive house building in the United States. Its name means green path in Spanish. It is made up of two mid-rise buildings, the first built in 2022 and the 34-story tower completed in early 2024. They are all electric, feature Energy Star appliances and heating and cooling systems. They are built with toxin-free finishes. Other amenities include community gardens and shared terraces with native plants. There's a fitness center. Thanks to government incentives and mandates, Sendero Verde uses about half the energy of similar buildings. Ocean Arc's Fish Farming Vision. Years ago, I had the privilege to serve as an intern at the New Alchemy Institute on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. It is now defunct, but its new age notion of turning lead into gold lives on. So many pioneers are transforming our society in ways that are sustainable and that provide for a rich quality of life. We are turning crisis into opportunity. New alchemy developed a unique form of stationary arcs, greenhouses with aquaculture, spaces for families to thrive and grow as prosumers. As an intern, I worked in the arc, composting, managing the gardens, tending the tilapia. So an article about ocean arcs caught my eye. Ocean Sovereign is a British startup that has developed a new concept for fish farming. In partnership with Ocean Arc Tech of Chile, a collaboration of Chilean aquaculture experts and Chilean naval officers, Ocean Sovereign has come up with a new idea for fish farming. It has designed a new special vessel, a 558-foot trimaran that is 210 feet wide to accommodate massive fish cages. Each vessel will have either 4 or 8 large cages made of anti-fouling copper-zinc alloy mesh that provides both structure and predator protection. The self-cleaning cages will be served by 4 cranes. The arcs are mobile fish production platforms that can be out at sea for up to a month and then deliver up to 4,400 tons of product to markets. This new form of fish farming has clear advantages. It cuts the tie that keeps aquaculture along the coast. Imagine ocean arcs drifting with natural currents to serve the fish. It is a fish farming solution that is the closest a fish can be to its natural habitat. It's about bringing the fish to where they belong, the ocean, cutting costs, and improving fish health and quality. The vessel will stay away from heat waves, algae blooms, and storms, aquaculture's 3 Achilles heels. Ocean Sovereign has big ambitions. It intends to help feed the world's growing population in line with the United Nations 2050 Food Security Challenge. It plans to build a fleet of ocean arcs deployed and capable of producing 132,000 tons of high-grade farmed fish for the U.S. market and the same for the European market. That would require about 50 of these special vessels. Ocean Sovereign plans to use the vessels to fish warm and cold water fish species, including salmon, black cod, canpachi, trout, and tuna. More on the planned vessels. The arcs are designed to operate in waves up to 23 feet in height. They can store 496 short tons of feed. They can operate without resupply for 25 days. They have a cruising speed of 3 to 4 knots depending on species being farmed. Ocean Sovereign has quotes from shipyards to build the arcs. Each vessel is expected to cost around $33 million. Heavy lift cargo drones servicing offshore wind. Imagine the efficiency of using drones to provide tools and parts to workers servicing offshore wind turbines. Updating equipment normally would require a vessel to sail from one turbine to another, use a crane to lift each box of equipment to the turbine's nacelle. Now the drone can make a trip from the supply vessel to each nacelle in about 4 minutes. The use of drones reduces time, increases safety, and minimize carbon emissions from supply vessels that would normally ply the waters moving from ship to ship. Heavy lift drones were tested in the United Kingdom and are now being used by the Danish wind energy giant Ørsted to transport cargo at the 725-megawatt Borssell wind project in the North Sea. Heavy lift cargo drones, HLCDs, are moving cargo from a vessel and delivering it to 94 wind turbines in the farm. The drones being used have a wingspan of 8.5 feet and are capable of carrying a cargo of up to 220 pounds in weight. Their use is considered a pioneering move, replete with operational efficiency and safety in the offshore wind industry.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.